good. This is what happens when you organize the show literally the second before the show starts. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. I didn't notice anything happening. I do think I might join the ukulele orchestra, but only if I can go full punk rock, so... I don't know if that's an option or a division, but...
Full punk rock ukulele?
Yeah, it's got to be out there. I'm going to madly Google it when I get home. That's what I do. I don't read the news. I do read the news, just not on this day, because we have an hour of exciting stuff coming up. Right, Adam?
That was a good segue.
Yeah.
Whew. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And sometimes we interview local newsmakers and politicians. That will be some other week, because this week we are just going to talk about the news, including the carbon tax. Ontario is launching a Supreme Court challenge to the carbon tax, even though Doug Ford has said that he'd be waiting till after the election. But will this challenge to the carbon tax ever end? And then, do you have Donald Trump fatigue? I have a pill for that. No, I don't. A lot of pundits are talking about it, and it's either going to hurt Democrats or it's going to hurt Trump. But it's going to hurt someone, and we'll get out our black Sharpies and try and determine who. And then finally, not a good start, Boris. Pretty much sums it up. We'll look at a rankus week in the UK House
Order.
Of Commons.
Order!
He's the best.
He's a celebrity now.
Order!
I'm going out
first,
for him as Halloween.
Speaking of order, a big political story that broke on Tuesday afternoon, a exodus of 14 New Brunswick NDP members to the Green Party. These are provincial people, so people who have run in the past for the NDP, and people who are planning on running for, I think they were planning on running for the federal election for the NDP. And they had this big conference, press conference in Moncton, where they, 14 of the candidates plus a party insider, someone who was in charge of organizing on the East Coast, said that, screw it, they're going to be Green Party now. Except there is breaking news on that front today.
Oh, tell me more. I was sequestered today. I couldn't really...
This is from CBC. The New Brunswick Green Party now says that 5 of the 14 former provincial NDP candidates it claimed had defected this week have not, in fact, abandoned the party. So this seems...
What?
This is kind of a breaking development where the Green Party is kind of taking some steps back. It seems like some of these names were... staple to the press release and were as shocked as anyone to find out that they had abandoned the NDP.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that adds another layer of intrigue to this.
So we were going to work the whole show with the 14 number, but it's actually 5.
Well, maybe. No, 5 have said they're stick, so it's actually 9.
Oh, 9. Okay, so there's 5. Well, they're not really...
Which 9 is not as sexy as 14.
No, and they're not really dissenters. And I guess it includes Jonathan Richardson.
Who's still, yeah.
I guess he was the organizer for NDP Atlantic, so everything past a certain line is just one person. So I guess everything past the Quebec line was this guy. I'm not sure who it is now. He was on the national executive. And some of the, he made some interesting comments, and then he doubled down on them, which was even more interesting. First being that...
Never doubled down.
Yeah. Obviously that there was no path to victory for the NDP in the Atlantic provinces, by the sounds of it, no candidates in New Brunswick or PEI. And then, of course, he mentioned the race card. He didn't play the race card, but he did say that traveling around the province, something that came up a lot, especially in the north, and I don't know how the people in the northern New Brunswick feel about this, but he said that people have issues, let's say, with a leader who is brown and wears a turban.
Yeah, he did a tap dance around the race card.
And then he did it again on As It Happens the following day. He didn't refute anything that he said, anything about racism. It was, what did he say exactly? Because I happen to hear stuff. It was, people think he's a Muslim. People think he's a Muslim, which he is not.
Not and that there's anything wrong with being
exactly,
a Muslim either.
But this is the thing. And the fact that he was born somewhere else. And I'm thinking to myself, everything that you are saying is not helping the case that you're making
for a progressive
a progressive front. And of course, you know, Elizabeth May and others in the Greens turned to Twitter and she said, you know, obviously no room for racism in the Green Party. But it sounds like a big chunk of the premise of these people coming on board, according to Richardson. Now, they haven't actually, have any of them spoken out today? Any of these defectors or whatever?
I think it's mostly being handled at like the party level. I have not seen anything from any.
So there hasn't been any
themselves.
Unequivocal denial of racism.
But, you know, I'm looking at the picture of the press conference from Moncton, and there's eight of them standing there, including Richardson. So, like, the 9-10 number of people who are, like, actually jumping ship seems kind
it's
of accurate.
Sense, yeah.
Right. Yeah, the racism thing, and I just looked up Jagmeet Singh's birthplace, and it's Scarborough.
Scarborough,
so he's Canadian. We don't have any sort of silly thing that says, you know, the prime minister can't be someone who isn't born elsewhere. But I mean,
all that aside, like,
aside that, but yeah, the Richardson comments were even more terrible coming off of a week where Jagmeet Singh's brother, whose name escapes me off the top of my head, it's Garatan Singh. He was at an event and there was one of these neckbeards with a camera phone going, do you think Sharia law should be in the law in Canada? It's like, first of all, he's a Sikh. Second of all, that's racist. Third of all,
I'll debate you anytime. It's like, who are you? What are you?
Yeah.
What debate you?
Like, which was more or less the reaction of social media after like people praise Garatan Singh for not like pounding his lights out.
Yeah.
But
handled it really, really well.
Handled it like a pro, considering
it's Mississauga.
You know,
it's Mississauga. Yeah. You can see Mississauga City Hall in the background. I'm like, is this the other guy?
Right.
Not saying so, for real? Like, do you know where you live, dude?
I think
like,
he was targeted because he's the NDP leader's brother.
Oh, and he spoke to him, and he spoke at this Muslim event.
Right.
Right. And
which you would if you're a politician and you're going to community events.
Like all true racists, this guy, you know, just goes by skin tone and confuses everything and starts blabbing about Sharia.
Yeah.
So it is definitely out there. Right. It's not as if, you know, it's a factor in the election that is sort of directly related to this in that it's like, where are you guys getting your intel? I mean, on the political side, it's like, I don't know where. I mean, obviously, Richardson is getting this stuff out in the field, but that's the kind of thing you say it. And then when the reaction is what it is, you somehow backpedal or at least try to pull it back a bit because if that really wasn't what you were saying, then you have to make it clear that it wasn't really what you were saying. And he didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So to me, the optics of this are really bad. It's like you're saying you can't win a so-called progressive seat with a brown guy at the helm. That's what this tells me. Beyond the whole NDP has no presence, and they said that Singh didn't come to the province. I bet there are other federal leaders that haven't quite made it to New Brunswick yet. Those were the excuses that used, and they're ridiculous excuses.
You need
a better excuse than that to defect from.
There's so many things that play
party, right?
Here, and I'm not sure like any one of the wrongs. Like I'm sure that one of the reasons the NDP have taken a hit is because there's a Sikh man leading them. There's someone who's like a visible minority leading them. Racism exists, you know, no question about it. The thing is too that there's one guy, Yvonne Godden, who is the only NDP guy to have won in like the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he won six times. Like the joke was like, there's been six NDP victories in New Brunswick over the last like quarter century. And it was the one guy being reelected six times. Uh-huh. So, I mean, part of this you have to look at too is like naked opportunism. There's no NDP seats in the New Brunswick legislature. There are, however, three Green seats. You combine that with the Green official opposition status in PEI, and maybe you have a bunch of politicians who see just like naked political opportunism. It's like, okay, the Greens are where it's at right now. If we want to make waves, if we want to get our names in the paper, maybe we should be Green Party. And, you know, that's been known to happen. That's politics.
Sure, but it should be made clear that these are people. These are failed candidates. These people never won anything.
No,
as you were saying, they've never won any seats. So it's not. I mean, it's a defection from the party, but it's not. It's not as if It was sort of presented as if like MPPs were crossing the floor to do this. Not
right,
at all.
No.
These people are essentially rookies, really. I mean, some of them maybe have run before, I imagine. Right. And they all have run before.
I think the story was, too, that they were potential like federal candidates because I think...
Because they were provincial candidates.
The story, yeah, the story is that NDP hasn't acclaimed any candidates in New Brunswick yet. So these were kind of all maybe potential people who could have been on the ballot, too. But yeah, it's. I mean, it also fits nicely into the narrative of the NDP struggling, and the NDP is struggling to an extent, and some of that might be attributed to Jagmeet Singh's commitment to try and get more representation on the ballot. There was a press release a tweet that I saw today.
Tweets are the new press releases, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't retweet it, but it's just like it was like the percentages, like how many women the NDP have recruited. 8% was a number that stuck out. That's the number of Indigenous candidates they have. Mm-hmm. So it could be a more discerning NDP right now as well. And so maybe some of these people who were by and large white men maybe felt a bit threatened. And the interesting part about this, and I was having this conversation with some people yesterday who weren't exactly NDP members, let's say, but it was noted that, you know, aside from dedication to fighting climate change in a bit more serious way than the Conservatives and the Liberals, there really isn't that much air between the NDP and the Greens. Like, they're two very different parties. The Greens are much more pro-business.
Oh yeah, and
than the NDP.
The NDP have been deking left more this time around than I think they have in maybe the previous 20 years.
Yeah,
they're tacking that way because they know that's their turf, and they have to kind of. People have said this for years that they have to get back to that zone, but because it's kind of the only unclaimed patch, right? We've got Liberals in the center, Conservatives to the right, and the Greens are kind of, as they say, in front. You know, when they say they will work with anybody, that means, you know, sometimes.
Well, that's not true. Elizabeth May this week said that she wasn't going to support any minority.
Oh, no, I thought that was policy that they would. Well, they could join a minority, and then if they don't get their way, they'll bring it down. Kind of like what Jack Layton did. That's politics, though. But they do say that they will, you know, anybody that's going to advance green goals, they'll work with them. So that leaves... To me, seems to leave the left wide open. So if you're going to go all in for pharmacare and all these, let's say, Sanders-esque type things to deke south. So they're deking south and they're deking left. But yeah, so that's, and they have to do that because there really is nowhere for them to go at this point. And, of course, to go green.
Yeah.
Which has been, you know, going back a few years, if you read the Leap Manifesto, it's essentially the Green New Deal. What are they calling it? The Green New Democratic Deal? So they are, you know, they're attempting to get a little bit of a foot in the green turf, let's say. But yeah, they're definitely not as pro-business as the Greens seem to be.
Right.
At least the party seems to be. You know,
I also wanted to – there was an interesting profile in the National Post. I don't say that lightly, but they profiled this kid, Mackenzie Thompson, who's the interim leader of the NDP in New Brunswick. He's 22 years old, and he works 4 jobs. And in the meantime –
so true millennial.
Like in his spare time, he's the leader of the NDP in the province of New Brunswick.
More power to him.
Yeah, so I mean, damning image of the NDP prospects in New Brunswick, that it's a 22-year-old kid who's squeezing it between jobs like delivering the Telegraph Journal and, you know, the 3 other jobs that he's gotten, like going to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon so he can get up at midnight so he can deliver the frickin' paper, and then in his spare time he's running a provincial party.
I love this guy. Mackenzie I wouldn't
Thompson.
Even care what the party was. That's a great story. Well, there's maybe one party I might... Anyway, but we'll talk about that some other time.
But yeah, so he you know, the condition of the NDP provincially in New Brunswick isn't that great when, you know, the overworked millennial is, like, leading the way between 4 jobs and binge-watching something on Netflix. I don't think he has time to binge-watch anything. Except maybe his own life.
He just reads the wiki on stuff so he can talk about it.
Yeah,
at
maybe.
The office. Yeah. One of his 4 offices, even, except the paper route.
Speaking of election issues, a big one is going to be the Greenhouse Gas Pollution Pricing Act. How many of you knew that was the real name for the carbon tax?
I only know because I looked it up.
Yeah, I know.
I was
right?
Like, oh, that's what it's called. Yeah.
I've been putting it in all the posts I've been writing about the carbon tax on
Everybody
Politico
because huh?
It's just like, let's call it what it is. Like it's like Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, but
it's not as snappy as carbon tax, right?
Right. Well, it's not as snappy as job-killing carbon tax. Before we get into this, I just want to note something that's been reported that Justin Trudeau's only agreed to 2 out of 5 of the leaders' debates. Oh. And if that was Stephen Harper, we would be, like, demanding his head on a plate.
Marching in the streets.
Yeah. So, like, Trudeau's, like, kind of really let himself slide on the progressive stuff. Anyway.
And they're both in French. No, I don't know.
No, it's the Leaders Commission, Leaders Debate Commission one. So the English
official
one and the French
ones.
One.
Yeah.
And he hasn't responded to the Monk debate, the CTV McLean, not CTV, the City TV and McLean's, and then the other one was TVA, so, which would probably be a French one.
I kind of missed this, and maybe you saw it. Is it Hassan Minhaj? He got steamrolled him or something in an interview?
Hassan Minhaj, yeah. The Patriot Act on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see it, or?
Yeah, it's haunting.
I need to watch it then. Just a bit of an aside for people out there.
It's kind of haunting. You could
something
see
that's on my list.
Justin Trudeau thought he was going in for another like
softball?
Peppy softball interview with an American, like Poppy Harlow did one with Justin Trudeau, which was like
gushy.
It was there were so many softballs, you know, there might as well have been no pitching at all. But
Nerf balls were being thrown.
Nerf balls, yeah, it's more like Nerf balls. And then, yeah, he did one with 60 Minutes, like shortly after he was elected. That was also like, you know, it just plays into such expectations about what Americans think of Canada. But yeah, The Hassan Minhaj one was vicious.
Oh, there you go.
So it's worth watching. What were we talking about? Carbon tax. So,
yes.
Doug Ford. On August 23rd, the press asked him about the carbon tax challenge in court. As you may remember, back in June, the Ontario Court of Appeal in a 4-1 decision said it was constitutional. On August the 23rd, Doug Ford, when asked, said that he was going to wait to see how the election turned out before proceeding. And then the next week, Jeff Urich comes out and says, hey, we're proceeding. So, cool.
And he went, what?
Yeah. So, so the Ontario appeal of the Ontario Court of Appeals decision is going forward. We don't know when that will be. In the meantime, the Saskatchewan appeal to the Supreme Court of that decision that came back in May is going forward. It's going to be heard on January the 14th. Mm-hmm. Although Saskatchewan wanted to delay that, but the Supreme Court said no, it's going to go forward on January the 14th, the hearing in that case.
Yeah, they said the delay was to would provide for better coordination
yeah.
of all of the challenges. A group grievance, if you will. They want to go in together and
right.
they're not it looks like they're not going to allow
well,
that,
they're all interveners in each other's cases. So like Saskatchewan's an intervener.
The team's gotta shuffle all around.
In Ontario's case, Ontario's an intervener in Saskatchewan's case. Although PEI is no longer an intervener in the Saskatchewan case. The PEI pulled itself.
And I heard that. And why did they say that? So is it to do with numbers or
Dennis King's explanation was because he got a lot of crap for it back in, I think it was June.
Like
when he,
joining the case, you mean?
Yeah, as an intervener.
Right.
I mean, because PEI, again, PEI has a Green Party opposition.
Right.
So he got a lot of din for it back in June. He said it was just basically to keep their options open and, at the end of August, he said, okay, we don't need it. So options.
But are they still raging against the tax? Or?
Well,
there's no sticker
probably,
campaign?
But I mean, not yet. But I mean, you would think that if they had in them the political will to rage, the way to do that would be either to A, launch an appeal themselves, or to B, remain an intervener in these cases. And they've decided not to be an intervener. They decided to not have a voice at all.
Yeah, I guess if you're they're the least populous province, right? At like 150,000 or something. It's more mm-hmm. people in Guelph. Not to belittle PEI, but it's like maybe they don't have the resources or energy. It's just kind of like, oh, we're going to stay out of this one. But that's not to say that these other cases, including the powerhouses of Alberta, Ontario, Manitoba, and New Brunswick, aren't going to keep mm-hmm. on keeping on. Now, I guess we should talk a little bit about the carbon pump stickers. Their demolition in Ontario is in full swing. I mean, what did they expect? Realistically, what did they expect? I heard that the NDP stickers, because they have a sticker campaign, is voluntary. But it sounds like there's going to be, and this is another Supreme Court case, there's going to be another court case. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association has launched a lawsuit this week saying that the gas pump stickers violate free speech and that, you know, the gas station's opinion isn't necessarily the opinion of the government. So whoever runs the franchise, doesn't matter who it is. And it's different when a gas pump says something like that's safety information or something like don't use your cell phone. That's one thing. But this is, it's pretty much an opinion piece. And it sounds like people's opinion hasn't been very good. They're just ripping these things to shreds or slapping other stuff over them.
Which is like the most predictable thing to happen.
Oh, what? Exactly. What were they thinking? You know, it's, oh, you'll get a fine of how much, what is it, big bucks? Like,
it
never
is.
Show us
five. $500 per day for individuals and $1,000 per day for repeat offenders. For like groups and businesses, it's $5,000 per day or $10,000 per day for repeat. Although those are the maximum fines, and after much backlash from like the business community, who are supposed to be the Conservative Party's bread and butter, they said, well, you know what, you're not going to get the full, like maybe you'll get a warning. This is going to be an education period to start with. So what they're going to do is they're going to go around to these gas stations and go, hey, we look for your carbon tax sticker and not on the pumps. And the proprietor's going to go, well, they were on the pumps, but you know, every time I put a fresh one on there, somebody comes over with a Sharpie or with their own sticker or one of those Smokes Poutine stickers or something, and like defaces it. And all it is, it's like a great big hustle. And it's like, I think a lot of gas stations just did it because they don't want to be dinged on the fines. And I think as time goes by and these stickers become like faded and defaced and all that, like they're not going to bother to replace them because why would you?
I don't really envy the special constables or whoever it is that's going to have to go run and try and enforce that. They'll be like laughed out of the everywhere. But beyond the stickers, it's a very small part of the, I think Ontario said that they were going to pledge a $30 million court fight against this. They're going to spend $30 million of our money, which is a line the Conservatives like to use.
Yeah.
They're going to use $30 million of our money to fight the, I was going to say carbon tax, but I was trying to use the other phrase, carbon pricing, to which we get most of it back.
Yeah. Which all the stickers don't make that point either.
No, the stickers are just like, the price of gas is higher. It's like the price of gas is generally always higher. And the carbon tax in Alberta that the NDP came up with was immediately repealed by the Kenny government.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the one in BC marches on, has for years.
Yeah, they've had a carbon tax in place for years.
And I guess they do have some of the highest prices for gasoline in the country, but it sounds like it's working in terms of hitting some targets. I don't have the exact number, but there was a number listed about how much emissions they reckon have gone down due to the carbon pricing in BC. So on and on and on. So
and also there's no talk about repealing it in Quebec either, which has a cap and trade scheme with California. Ontario is originally part of that, but you know, the CAC government in Quebec, I mean, which is not a fiscally conservative government itself, has, you know, made no attempts to repeal it, or you know, has not joined any of these lawsuits.
No.
So
they are essentially a conservative government, but they're conservative-esque.
Well,
kind of like the liberals in BC.
Carbon tax itself is the conservative response to climate change.
Yeah.
But
they came up with it, right? Was it not there?
I mean, again, it's like the Obamacare thing. Like the Affordable Care Act is essentially the Heritage Foundation's plan for Medicare reform. And then, you know, the Democrat adopts it, and all of a sudden it's like the most socialist thing you could ever do. And it's the same thing with the carbon tax. And a lot of people who are more environmentally activists than Justin Trudeau will point out that, you know, the benchmarks that they're trying to reach are the ones that were established by Stephen Harper, which were limp to begin with. And that, you know, so many of the industries are exempt from, you know, carbon credits and carbon taxation. And so it's like it's
you'll kill us.
Yeah.
So you need to give us an exemption.
Plus pipeline. Like, that's another thing that happened. I mean, there's six more legal challenges to the Trans Mountain pipeline now that they're getting construction on that, too. And it's like, this is such a schizophrenic problem in this country, at least at the government level, where you have a government that's trying to be Dr. Jekyll and fix the environment, and you have Mr. Hyde, you know, turning on the taps at the oil pumps. It's just gonna make a messier election, that's for sure. And Justin Trudeau's like, he's got like, don't envy him having to explain it to people on the hustings and over the next couple of weeks.
Difficult to explain. So it would seem that Doug Ford said that he might not go through with the challenge, but of course that would be dependent on a conservative majority in the upcoming election, which would effectively like kill the legislation outright, and then they won't have to challenge it because it will just be gone to be replaced with an undetermined program of some description that might do something maybe, but probably not. There, that's my...
Well, who knows what it'll be replaced by? I mean, who
nothing.
Knows
it'll
what...
It'll be replaced with nothing. That's my... Sorry.
I mean, and Saskatchewan says, there, like, yeah. Even if the Conservatives win, they're still going to carry on. So it's, you know, they're going to...
We're going to fight the thing that
doesn't
exist.
They're still
going to
go forward with shooting the corpse. If the Conservatives get there first and kill it, they're still going to take their shot. It's so bizarre.
I want my shot at this thing that was repealed because...
And it's also silly on top of that, because the basis of this is that carbon taxation is unconstitutional. And it's just like, if this is unconstitutional, and I think this has been borne out in the decisions...
So far, yeah.
Like, nothing. Like, no tax from the federal level is constitutional.
Well, because the Ontario decision, they said that fighting climate change was a matter of a national concern.
Yeah.
And the Saskatchewan decision said that deciding what the minimum standards are for a greenhouse gas emission price is federal jurisdiction. So one kind of bumped it to the feds. Actually, both decisions bumped it
to
the feds.
Well, the Saskatchewan decision was like even more, it was like a 3-2 split versus the Ontario, which was 4-1. But the 3-2, like, it basically came down to the fact that the Saskatchewan court said, like, this isn't for the courts to decide. This isn't a court. This isn't legal matters. Like, the government was in its right, had its right to do this, but you can't come to the court and say they did this wrong, because it's none of our concern. Like, if something's constitutional or it's not constitutional, this is constitutional. If it's fair or not, that's not for the court to decide. So, I mean, I think it's going to go nowhere. But in the meantime, we're sure wasting a lot of time, effort, energy, and money to make sure it goes nowhere.
Yeah, our MPP Mike Schreiner called at least the Ontario decision political theater, which is pretty much
more
what it is. How can we beat on Trudeau? How can the resistance fight? This is how they do it, with your tax dollars. But anyway.
All right.
I love making that point because it's such a Freudian point to make, right?
Enough Canada stuff. We need to talk about...
our other countries.
We need to talk about real statesmen like Donald Trump and Boris Johnson. That's
nice.
Coming up next. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Say I played that for selfish reasons. I realized I can't remember where I heard it, but I heard it off in the distance and caught the name. That band is Dark for Dark. I believe they're from Nova Scotia. It's from their 2016 album All Dressed. And I'm going to send that out to Andrea, who's left us, who was a big fan of just chips in general, particularly All Dressed. So,
okay.
So,
I was like, I don't know how these
very
things
sweet
connect.
Sound. I'm hoping to listen to the whole thing one of these days. So. And we miss you, Andrea. We really do.
Get a Spotify account. Think you'd listen to it. I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's coming. So many accounts, so many passwords, so little time, such is life.
Well, speaking of so little time, try keeping up with what's going on in the world of Donald Trump.
Such fatigue.
It is such fatigue. It seems to be
much tired.
One of those things that sometimes there's a group think if you let's see the Washington pundit class. But a bunch of them came to the conclusion last weekend that we're all suffering from Trump fatigue, in that there's too much news being generated by the 45th president of the United States. Not all of it consequential, not all of it substantive, some of it, frankly, silly. And I would include that Sharpiegate, which happened yesterday, which is that Donald Trump got out this map, this weather map, and added a black line, allegedly, around, so it would fill it. So it would
definitely
look like
a Sharpie black line, but who
added
it?
Allegedly, he did it. But so it looked like the track of the hurricane, Hurricane Dorian, which is causing untold destruction, which is ultra, ultra serious, especially in the Bahamas, where one of the islands has basically been
wiped out.
Like Death Starred. It's basically been completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. They can't even get supplies in because the airport is gone. The runways are covered in debris, and you kind of need a runway in order to get supplies onto an island. Well, by plane anyway, which is how most of that is done. But the thing of it too is that he committed a crime because it's illegal to deface official weather maps.
Oh, something else impeachable. Is that?
Well, I mean, again, and this is the thing, is like he's doing so much like Sharpiegate, and then it like wipes like legitimate stuff off the front page. And by that I mean, yesterday, you might have missed it, but the Trump administration repealed Bush-era provisions making requiring that all light bulbs be held up to certain environmental standards.
Oh, this is Bush 2.
Bush 2, yes.
Right, okay.
But those standards have been repealed now. It's gone back to before the Bush era, even though like most light bulbs now are made up to those standards,
LED,
if not
now,
better
yeah.
standards.
They've superseded the old standard, yeah.
Another thing that you might have missed yesterday, a man named Joe Balesh, who was an assistant secretary in the Department of the Interior, he got a job as senior VP for an oil company that is looking to develop oil in the Alaska Wildlife Preserve, which makes sense because at the Interior Department, this guy Balash pushed through the repeal of protections of the Arctic Wildlife Preserve.
Oh, set himself up, so to speak.
And then over the last 7 weeks, I haven't heard this in too many places because it seems to be a local story that hasn't really penetrated the national media. But kids and young people who have lived in the United States for years were given notices of deportation. And This isn't having anything to do with the Dreamers. This has to do with kids with serious to terminal illnesses who were getting specialized medical treatment in the United States, including this one young woman whose name is Isabel Hueso. She was from Guatemala, has been in the United States since she was like about 8 or 9 years old, but she has this rare disease that doesn't even have like a real name. It's called MPS6. But it basically means her body can't break down sugars. It sounds like kind of a little bit like diabetes times
extreme.
A million.
Yeah.
But her body can't break down sugars. It affects her growth. It affects her breathing. It affects her heart. It affects her spinal cord. But she was getting treatment in the United States. Treatment so successful, by the way, she was able to get a law degree. She's 24 years old. But of course, you know, in Trump era, she's out because she's from Guatemala. But I mean, these are like the important news stories that get like crumpled up and thrown into the tertiary bin of stuff to do because he's doing stuff like defacing weather maps.
The showman is tweeting.
And tweeting about Deborah Messing, of all cockamamie people.
Yeah, he does tend to lean towards anything that's on TV, which sort of speaks to his life, I suppose, beyond getting trotted out every once in a while.
Oh, did we mention congratulating Poland for getting invaded by the Nazis 80 years ago?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that one.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulated them.
Because he was supposed to go to Poland because it's the 80th anniversary of the invasion.
Yeah, 19 September 1939.
Yeah. But he canceled that trip to, quote, monitor the hurricane, unquote.
Sharpie.
And then somebody asked him, like, about Poland, and he said, oh, congratulations, Poland, great country. And it's just like, So congratulations for getting invaded by the Nazis eight decades ago? Question mark.
Made us the country we are today. The best line I heard about this Trump fatigue, which has surfaced again, was on Politico, not mm-hmm. Golf Politico, but Politico, that Trump acts like he needs to produce enough programming and material to fill a 24-hour news network.
Yes.
There just always has to be some content thing going on, whether it's the sparring match with Scaramucci, right?
Yeah.
Who himself is a Trump-esque character and was in the orbit for like, what, 5 days or something?
11.
11 days, okay.
Let's be real. It was 11 days.
All the crap about purchasing Greenland. Let's just buy it. Holding the G7 at his resort. All of this stuff kind of, I was going to say Trump's. We need a new word for trumping. I'll go back to supersedes and overwrites all of the other things that you were listing. Extremely serious, very serious, very serious things you're talking about. That's what Trump would say. So we're looking at it. And people are getting, certain people, lots of people in America are getting tired. What was her name? Dahlia Lithwick, who is on Slate. She was on CNN. Yep. And she was, her comments were that people are going numb and everything is insane. Those were her two main points. It's like, people are numb. The exact quote was, these are categorically insane times.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of listed a litany of things that are potentially impeachable. And impeachable things aren't necessarily
crimes.
When laws are broken.
Yeah.
It can be something like tax fraud, which should be super criminal. Tax fraud when it involves the state. Like if you've done something that, we don't get too much into it. We haven't got super much time. Or obstruction. No obstruction. Obstruction, especially when it's connected to the government, impeachable, right? But there's been no obstruction, so we don't have to worry about that. So people are tired, but I found a really, really early reference to Trump fatigue, and I'm not sure whether this kicked it off. 2017. So 4 months into Trump's term, somebody was writing about Trump fatigue, and I think it was in Vox, and she was saying that they weren't sure how much more that they could take. So their head probably has exploded by this point, just need to turn media on, and they go, Poof. It's like, I can't handle this. Or maybe they've moved somewhere where we don't talk about Trump as much. We'd like to think we don't talk
don't
about Trump as much in Canada, but we do.
Have a smartphone anymore.
Because there's so much there, we are Siamese with the, I guess we can't really say that anymore, conjoined to the U.S. So we definitely need to cover it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't shut Trump out completely. And I had mentioned this too about, well, that last time I was in the U.K., it's like I heard him speak once. Whereas here, he just steamrolls everything because of our proximity, right?
Well, so, also the ludicrousness of it too. It's, you know, it's so hard to separate yourself from it. I mean, because part of it is, can you believe this is happening? And part of it is, you know, you want to think that people who are leaders have some kind of innate skill or knowledge that elevates them to the status of leader.
Yeah.
But somebody like Donald Trump blows all that up because it's like,
oh, there is no rule book anymore. The rule book was set on fire.
It's like he walked into the Oval Office, it was empty, and then he sat down in the chair behind the desk, and everyone started treating him as a president.
And there's flames behind him, and he's like, this is fine.
Right.
He's that little dog.
But one of the things I read is, you know, that Trump is addicted to chaos. That because he really actually doesn't know how to do anything, creating chaos is a way of feeling like he's doing stuff. But more than that, is
things
like
are happening.
A lot of his supporters are also addicted to chaos because a lot of them voted for Donald Trump because he was going to, you know, blow things up, not literally, but, you know, in terms of like the system and all that. He was going to come in, he was going to shake things up, and he was going to remake Washington. And a lot of people just like watch. You know, like it's that line from The Dark Knight. Some people just want to watch the world burn. Mm. And, you know, Donald Trump is like that. And unfortunately, a lot of people who support Donald Trump unwaveringly want to watch the world burn, too, because it feels like they're sticking it to the people who have had negative influence on their life, whether that's libtards, whether that's pharmaceutical companies, whether that's big business, whether that's Hollywood, whether, you know, what it is. Trump is fighting for them. Whether it doesn't matter who the enemy is.
Brown women, anti-fascists.
Yeah.
But yeah, interestingly, I saw a Trump 2020 bumper sticker in the ward on a truck the other day. And it had an Ontario plate, and I was thinking, you know, you can't vote for him, right? So you're trying to make some other kind of statement, aren't you?
Well, it's like people who wear Make America Great Again hats up here. It's, you know,
it's funny. Like, we're not going to. There was that incident on campus all those months ago, but it's probably a couple of years ago where that girl got her hat.
Well, it was right after the election, yeah.
It's Guelph. You should expect these things.
At least on campus.
You really should.
Have you ever been to the University of Guelph? Moving on.
Leave your red hats at home, probably.
You know what? I was at the 50s Diner last year for some sort of family function. This is an actual place in Cambridge. It's called
You don't mean Angels.
Diner.
You mean the 50s Diner.
No, it's called the 50s Diner in Cambridge.
We need to go there. But anyway,
they have these red hats in their display case that you can buy. It's like a souvenir. It's like a red hat and it has white lettering on it. It says the 50s Diner. It's like you never buy that hat because someone's going to see that red hat from afar with the white letters on it.
Make the 50s great again.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't even say that. It just says the 50s Diner.
Because when you see it from the back, it's like, oh, red hat. I always
think that when I see a red hat.
I have a red New York Yankees hat. I can't wear it anymore. So somebody wants...
Well, there's like red Blue Jays caps that people have. There's, you know...
You need a logo at the back, too, that says, note, this is not a MAGA hat. Or if it is, well, whatever.
I did see somebody...
I'm not going to knock it off your head, but I'm certainly going to laugh
at you. I did see somebody a couple of months ago wearing a Make Trudeau a Drama Teacher Again hat.
Ah, I guess that's not as bad as that one with the noose and, you know...
Well...
same family of... hats and swag. So,
all right. Speaking of hatless people, Boris Johnson had his first taste of being prime minister in the House of Commons this week. And to quote Speaker John Bercow, not a good start, Boris.
I thought you were going to say order.
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 That guy's a celebrity now.
Oh. Love
But no, so. Boris Johnson went to the Queen last week and said he was going to prorogue Parliament so he could get the fantastical, surely fictional, better deal on Brexit that the EU is not offering. So he goes back to the House this week. Very quickly, he cans 21 MPs.
The rebels.
The rebels who then joined the opposition bench, and then someone resigned from the Conservative Party and then joined the Liberal Democrats on the other side of the floor, which meant that Boris Johnson lost his majority in the House of Commons, which meant that the business of the House of Commons was now in the hands of the House, and they very quickly passed a bill that said that the UK cannot leave the EU without a deal.
The cross-party work here is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal in terms of I don't think we'd see the like here. There are obviously far more parties there and the defections left and right these days. And, of course, the people – I love how they call it the removing of the whip. It's like the the language is amazing. They're, even though we are structurally based on them, a lot of the rules are different.
Yeah.
Because one of the rebels – I can't remember his name. He's the father of the House. The longest-running member becomes the father of the House, male or female. So I don't think we have that here. But so it looks like there's going to be an election. The question is when. Mm-hmm. Johnson went to them and said – We need to have an election, and this is his ploy, along with a prorogue, to try and ram the UK past us. Technically, it's me, but that's another story. Past the October 31st day. It's Brexit at all costs, do or die. He said today, I'd rather be dead in a ditch than not see the Brexit go through October 31st.
He says his switch.
Yeah. He says there's a plan. There is no plan. There's no plan here. I think the legislation was to try and... It sounded like it was to get back to one of the May deals that all also failed miserably.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of it's kind of a placeholder thing. It's like, okay, we need this in place, Parliament prorogues, and then when it's a certainty with the people that are cooperating cross-party that the election isn't going to happen on the 31st, that it's going to be past that date, and the Brexit date is extended to January 31st, I think was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be the third
extension, yeah.
Right? It was 20, you know, it's been rejected, bumped forward. This is confusing as hell. I mean, you think we follow politics. I certainly find it difficult to follow because there's so much action happening.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that date gets bumped forward. Then it seems the other parties that are collaborating, it's not all of them, but it's most of them.
Well, it's
SNP,
yeah.
Labor, yeah. The big numbers. Then there's going to be an election.
Right. The idea was we're not going to have an election unless we can be assured that there's not going to be a no-deal Brexit, because that was the trick Boris Johnson wanted to pull, was that, okay, we're going to go through an election, and whether I get, like, a majority or not, like, the idea is, like, we wouldn't be able to put together some kind of deal or get an extension, because the election day would be October 15th, so you'd have, like, 2 weeks to either come up with a deal or just crash. So, I mean, that was kind of the wiliness, if you can call it that, of this, is that, you know, if you don't want it, we'll just go to an election, and then, you know, by then whoever wins will have 2 weeks to figure out something. And of course, Boris Johnson has famously said he doesn't care if there's a no deal Brexit, which will shoot the UK economy in the head, because stuff will arrive from foreign countries from which there's no customs agreement. Mm-hmm. It means, you know, trouble on the Irish border, because that's an open border right now that no one knows will know what to do with. It'll become a hard border overnight. And of course, Johnson's, you know, philosophy or strategy, if you can call it that, was that he wanted to keep the hard Brexit in his back pocket as like a bargaining chip. And it's like, what does the EU get out of the UK that the hard Brexit would be a bargaining chip? Because it's always seemed to me like the hard Brexit would hurt the UK far more than the EU.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. It's hard to tell where he's coming from. He's the most defeated guy so far. Like,
votes he loses.
None of his legislation has passed, and that supposedly is some kind of record.
Yeah.
As well,
yeah.
The EU will march on without the UK, but it does make it difficult in terms of there's the complications of all of this outweigh everything. I happen to see the sheet that was talking about, okay, Brexit happens the 31st. Here are things that people in the UK need to know, and it involves, first of all, your car. You drive over, now you're going to need an international driver's license, which not everybody has, mm-hmm. to tour around Europe and even Ireland, I guess,
mm-hmm.
the Republic side anyway. If you have a pet, they need to go into quarantine for weeks. There's all these things that aren't happening now because they belong to the family. You leave the family. It's like, it's hard Brexit, hard divorce. There are all these little things that are adding up. Ireland in particular, that you mentioned, that people, even just taking livestock across the border right now, it's fairly quick. It seems the main route is going to be like a 65-mile detour for everybody because if the border goes up. There's a very interesting app on, it's not even actually an app, on The Guardian that people need to check out if you're interested in terms of the Irish border. And it took 1 hour of traffic and crossings between the north and the south in Ireland. Or Northern Ireland and Ireland. And it's pretty amazing how many, you just leave it up for a bit, how many little dots cross, each one a unique crossing, and every single one of those is going to completely change.
Yeah.
If this comes through with no backstop, and it sounds like there will not be a backstop, right? It's just going to be...
Well, I mean, the backstop is being the sticking point, because the people who are very pro-Brexit don't want the backstop.
No, and we don't want any of that Euro garbage.
Remain... Or you know, conservatives who voted Remain but realize this is like sort of the direction that the leader was trying to go, like, you know, accept that you need a backstop. So it's fantasy land versus reality. And I have enjoyed, Theresa May sitting on the sidelines, like smiling, like kind of having a great time watching Boris flounder.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing today was like that I learned was that apparently there's like this big sort of split in the Johnson family, because
the brother.
Know, yeah. Well, not just that, but apparently like most of the Johnson family is pro-Europe.
Oh.
And Boris is kind of like the redheaded pair. But yeah, Boris Johnson's brother left the Conservative Party saying that.
Isn't he Joe? Joe Johnson?
Yes, Joe Johnson. He couldn't manage family loyalty and the national interest, which means that he couldn't be loyal to his brother and do what was in the best interest of the country, meaning that the best interest of the country is to have at least a deal go through before leaving the EU. I just want to read the headline from the Evening Standard, because it's kind of awesome. I'm referring to Joe Johnson resigning from the Conservative Party. He was also a junior minister in the Conservative Party. But here's the headline. Blow for Bojo as Brojo goes.
Ah, the Evening Standard.
It's a very lovely picture of Prince George and Princess Charlotte going to school next to this blow for Bojo as Brojo go goes.
People should know the Evening Standard is like the free paper that they hand out when you're getting on the tube.
Yeah, it's the Metro.
And then somebody wrote on the bridge, I got off the tube at Victoria Station, and somebody wrote on the bridge, the Evening Standard is bog roll. It's probably still there, which means toilet paper. So anyway. But they write great headlines. They write absolutely great headlines. So.
But I mean, it just reinforces. And again, like Theresa May, it's funny to watch her, you know, kind of smirk and smile through this, as like watching Boris. Like,
I told you so.
Right. But at the same time, I cannot sort of forgive her, because again, and the same thing for David Cameron, the two of them could have ended this before it even began. And I bring this up every time. It was non-binding. And before, like, Theresa May, the last thing she could have said, like, clearly this isn't working. So I'm, like, suspending Article 50. And if Boris Johnson comes in and figures out a way to make it work, great. But I'm not going to put the country through several more months living under the almost literally living under the gun, living under the pendulum doom. It's ridiculous. She could have stopped at any time. She wasn't going to be prime minister for too much longer anyway. Why not just suck it up and bite the bullet just call the whole thing off?
That's the thing with conservatives, at least the UK ones, but I think in general, is that there's people to please and they need to do that. Jacob Rees-Mogg reclining. Did you see any of what is he now? Head of the House, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that looks like he walked out of like 1890 or so, and he was having a little sleep on the benches. And of course,
first of all, that describes a lot of people.
Yeah, social media. No, this guy needs like a monocle and a top hat, which I think he has worn at some point. He's going to make a lot of money on the Brexit, and that's why he's for it.
Yeah,
true story. So,
also, are a lot of business people.
But he's kind of mocking people. This long session of Parliament, he's kind of leaning on the front benches, and it's just ridiculous stuff. It hasn't even been sublime. It's been completely ridiculous. But as you said, a non-binding thing, and of course, then when they evoke Article 50, it becomes all of this. So this is definitely a stay tuned story. But there already has been a vote for an election, and then it failed because they didn't have the 2/3 majority. But that's under the legislation. From the fixed election dates, right? So there's lots of things that have happened in a short period of time that have changed. The dynamic keeps changing.
And I will also put some of the blame on Jeremy Corbyn, because he has not come out as like firmly Remain. He's come out as like, I'll have another referendum, you know? But I mean, that's as far as he goes. And I think that's a dynamic that I don't think has been completely been explored. Like, Boris Johnson looks like an bigger idiot with each passing day. Yeah. But I don't think Corbyn has done a lot.
Keeping the cards close. He's like, well, we will get the best deal. I mean, he could get a majority and say, you know what, we're going to stay.
Right.
So there's lots of Liberal Democrats on the rise could be a hung parliament again.
Right. And that's
SNP
the thing too,
advocating for Scottish freedom, which also may be another
because
thing.
I looked at that poll that somebody did, that it's like if it works out with Labour with 202 seats, Liberal Democrats with 119 seats, and Conservatives with 110 seats. Well, you need 350 or 325, and between Labour and Liberal Democrats, you get to just six short of a majority. So, like, there still has to be, you know, and that's assuming those two could even work together in the beginning. But, this is a story for that will continue
another
later.
Another day, another time.
And we'll have to wrap up the show. That's it for this week. We hope you liked it. Stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, on Twitter at OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or your favorite podcast app at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And is it a repeat if sounds good to me?
It is indeed.
Okay, so Stacey is not back from vacation yet, but that's
soon enough. Stay tuned
for a repeat of DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will, of course, be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we'll see you then.